Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tabletop Radio Hour, your podcast for everything tabletop. My name is Zach, and this week I am joined by the wonderful crew. I have Mark, and I have Logan. Mark, how are you today?
I'm doing dandy. How are you doing, Logan?
I'm doing good. Thank you. How are you doing, Zach?
I'm doing very, very well. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me here today for another wonderful talk show episode. And I think today, to start off the episode, we are going to have one of our segments, and that segment is Session Zero. In Session Zero, we kind of plan for a gaming session. You know, I think most people who are listening know what the term Session Zero means. So I don't really. I feel kind of ridiculous.
So if you don't know, role play games are games where you play roles.
And Logan, if we're going that far back, I don't know.
This we might have is a ball. Have a
yes. Yes.
Oh man, but yeah, session zero is where we kind of prepare for a game we want to play.
Yep.
And in this case, we've taken a brief look at this game in the past in one of our previous segments. Mark brought it to us, and after getting into it, I'm glad he did. That game is Broken Compass. There is a small running joke among the three of us where nobody can say the name of this game.
I wasn't going to say it, but if you're calling it out.
nobody can, Zach? Are you saying?
Zach can't say it.
I can't say it.
Yeah. So there's a version of the game. There's a subset or like a setting that is called Golden Era. And
golden,
so for whatever reason,
golden age.
Broken
golden age.
Era, Golden Compass, Golden Broken, some combination therein of those words just seems to come out, which I get. I totally do that too, but it's been a fun joke.
it's going to be interesting when they come out with even more expansions and there's even more words to throw.
We're just
going to
keep tacking them together, you know?
Yeah.
It's going to be like Broken Golden Pirate, Espionage, Punk, Ooh-you.
Yeah.
Oh man. Oh yes, but I'm excited. So Mark, do you want to kind of lead us off here with Broken Compass here?
I can. There's a lot of really interesting things about this game, but one of the neat things they have is what they call for a starting point, they have what they call a pilot episode, which a lot of this game is kind of themed like a TV series. Mm-hmm. So for their pilot, what they're recommending is it's basically a kind of test game, or it's a place to try something and see if that's what you want to proceed with. If you're familiar with Star Trek, for example, they created a pilot episode and looked at it. And then when that was done, they said, yeah, we don't really like Jeffrey Hunter as Captain Pike. Let's make William Shatner Captain Kirk and get rid of the woman, make the guy with the pointy ears a little bit more prominent. And Star Trek was really unique because in that case, they actually did a second pilot, which they watched. And again, they said, okay, let's change the uniforms a little bit. Let's change the doctor. And then they proceeded with the rest of the series. So that's what the pilot is for, to kind of try some things, see what you like before going into the full game.
I think the idea of episode structure and like kind of a TV focus, as well as having some sort of pilot, is pretty normal in a lot of role play games now. in how people focus on and how they develop it. But the fact that this is written into the book, not just like a suggestion on the side or how people think about things,
and what's does interesting add about a this different game is they just put it more into the terminology.
Yep. Yeah, it's built in as opposed to a suggestion on the side.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So let's back it up. Broken Compass, what is it about from the start? Like, we've kind of read it, so we have that mindset. So Broken Compass is like an adventure game, right?
Yes.
To focus on, like, the Indiana Jones, the Nathan Drake, the, you know,
Lara Croft,
adventure, you know, finding that treasure, seeking out the unexplored or the lost places of the world.
That's pretty much exactly it, yes. It has a very pulp feel, very pulp. Much of that type of a flavor. So, the first step that we would have to do if we were playing this game is choose a location and time. Now, first of all, for time, the core book has a basic setting, which is 1999, which that's your relatively modern. It's still set a little bit back, so you don't have cell phones. There's still a little bit of, loss of communication.
Right, exactly.
But relatively modern. They also put out, as Logan mentioned earlier, they put out their first, they call it a season, and that's called Golden Age. And that is set in the 30s. Much more of that, the Mummy, Indiana Jones, punching Nazis type of flavor. And that has a lot more expanded stuff with it than the base core game. But that's basically what's out right now. They do have some stuff on the horizon that's going to expand that even further with a whole slew of different options. But we talked about this, but what do you guys think of for a time and place? Where would you want to set your game?
I'm always partial to punching Nazis because that's just awesome. That's such a classic time period, and we have so much good stock for that. But as we've been like reviewing and looking at it, I don't think there's an era that wouldn't be interesting.
Mm. Yeah,
agreed. Because it's like everything we could do is gonna be interesting because that's kind of the theme of the game.
Yeah, they did a good job putting the themes in the pulp side for each era or each time period or each style really well.
Right.
Yeah,
that's true.
They did a pretty good job so far of what I've seen.
Yeah, now full disclosure, we haven't played this yet, so we're just reviewing it based on what we've read and what things we could find.
Right.
So
we're setting this up as if we are going to play it, but we haven't. This is all brand new for all
of us. Absolutely.
I'm
perfectly fine with the golden age of things.
Now, as I was looking at golden age, the one concern I did have is it does go a little more into the supernatural side of things.
Yep.
So I wasn't sure if that's something you wanted to do
if you think,
or not, you know?
That's part of what that genre is.
Yep.
You know, you have the Mummy. Or you have Indiana Jones is constantly running into that sort of stuff.
Right.
Yeah, so, it's kind of like the weird and occult.
Yep, very much so.
You know, they kind of bring that occult feel into things.
Yep.
Yeah, you always they kind of went all into the concept that the Nazis were into looking for that sort of stuff. So
yeah,
that's what brings that in. And
well, a lot of different medias have done that specific thing. They also did that in like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, very much so.
Let's say for an example.
It's a fun thing to pull in because there's a whole lot of misinformation about it, so there's a lot of space for stories to be made, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So what about a location? Where would you guys want to be?
Can I answer for Logan? I think Logan's gonna say, "Where can I punch some Nazis?"
Well, if it's in that time period, I think it's a guarantee that you're gonna run into a Nazi somewhere because you know they're always out searching for something.
Right. Yes, they really. That is true. I think they're pretty widespread. So that that's not a big limitation. Yeah, I think the interesting thing about Golden Age and there's a lot of supernatural. But like I say, this is very pulpy. This is very much a you know, mummy jumps in front of you, you punch it. So, you know, it's the horror element is kind of relative.
Right, definitely. It's kind of...
Well, you're still big damn heroes.
You know, Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There's still,
you know,
because
you think in the mummy, there were also, you know, there's the mummy itself, but then you think all the little scarabs.
Yep.
That's kind of thrown in there too. So that's a little less supernatural. So because it puts a real life thing with the supernatural, which is kind of that whole cult pulpy feel.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm perfectly fine with it. Cool. Absolutely. I watched The Mummy 8 million times as a younger person.
Yes, me too.
Nice. So, what about a location? Now, the book does say that this can be either something very specific, you know, like a specific city, like Panama, or it could be kind of vague, like China, or just a general environment, like someplace cold and icy.
Well, I think one of the things I really like about how this game is set up with the episodic structure is it's very easy to pop around between places. Oh, yeah. And it's like, okay, cool, we did a session. And even in that session, we're going to redline to somewhere else, or we're going to, you know, travel somewhere else. And the only thing that really happens to your character in that situation is that, cool, you've done this fast travel, so maybe some of the bonuses you had from whatever, you know, basically momentum you've built up goes away. But you still, I mean, it's not like you're stuck and we're going to be, you know, trudging through this jungle forever. You can if you want to.
Right.
That's totally a possibility.
Don't have to wait. Right. You don't have to wait at the airport for a layover for 4 hours.
Right.
You know, you don't see that.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
So.
Well, the thing here is, we're just talking about the pilot episode.
Oh, okay.
Every decision we make today is totally up for change
in the
before
future.
We actually start the game.
Because it's the pilot, you know, it's just the tester. Yeah, no,
yes,
I get it.
Yes. So in this case, you know, we're talking about a location. This is more specific to where do we want to start.
All right, this might be a little more like planning in my brain, but I think something where we're in the action right then. So like, let's go into that tomb in Peru and see if we can steal the idol, sort of thing. You know, or let's take a standard trope and just see how the mechanics of the game work out with whatever character concept we have.
You know, it's funny you say that, because that's kind of a running line for this entire game. Is the adventure is now.
Yeah.
This is very much about you're getting thrown in and, you know, the action is going right away. So I think that's why they kind of take this pilot approach to getting you started in the game.
Mm. Yeah. And kind of the more I've read of this, the more it just kind of reminds me of action sequences in 7th Sea.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And a lot more than the role playing or the, you know, dramatic scenes or whatever.
True.
So it's kind of like you throw a bunch of action sequences into a role playing game and go.
Yep. Yeah.
It's kind of what it feels like to me.
And especially like in the description therein for past, you know, they specifically encourage not writing some sort of backstory, and I think the phrase is just like
right.
Budapest. And the whole
concept
in there is like something comes up and you just like look to one of the characters like, man, this is just like Budapest. And they respond in some way that goes, you know, you remember Budapest very different than me. Or like, you know, something like that connects you guys in a way. So you can kind of like, as you're creating the narrative forward, you're also creating it backwards. And that's
exactly.
Yes. Which is really great. I love that.
That
writing tool, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, that's really cool.
So let's
think. I mean, you know, we can do.
And
what are you thinking? Are we leaning more indie or are we leaning more mummy? I'm kind of thinking indie.
I mean,
yes,
mummy's
yes,
great
all
too.
The above. I love. Yeah, like I said, I love mummy.
I'm an and person, not an or person.
So. There is an ancient pyramid in Nazi Germany. Boom.
No. There's a detachment of Nazis who are trying to get into a certain pyramid.
Yeah, that's fair.
South America.
Okay, you're getting ahead of yourself.
I am.
You're getting ahead. Just location. You want pyramids? Egypt?
Yeah.
Sure.
Let's go Egypt. We'll go full mummy then. Yeah, for location.
Well, or Raiders of the Lost Ark.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Okay, so here.
You got me there.
Now we can jump to actual character creation.
Right.
Ooh. Perfect.
And first step of character creation is, this is very similar.
Talk about character creation.
That's right. It's,
sorry.
But it's very similar to 7C. You choose two tags.
Yep.
And the tags are things like action hero, daredevil, gunslinger, medic, professor, soldier, thief. The Golden Age book also has some that are a little bit more specific to...
A little genre specific.
So there would be things like a detective or a native or a smuggler.
Smuggler. I was like, ooh, smuggler.
Yeah. And what those do is they go on your character sheet at the top where it says, call me if you need a, and then you put your two tags.
Mm.
So you might say, call me if you need a,
rebel gunslinger.
Whatever. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Now, there are rules if there's something you really, really want to just go all in on. You really want to be smuggler. You can choose smuggler twice and just be really...
It actually kind of encourages that if you look at the system's
development.
Call me
if you need a smuggler.
Well, it makes you a true smuggler is how they phrase it. Because it's not like you dabbled in that, but like that is such a focus for you. Yes. And though there's some overlap, what it gives you is an extra luck coin, so you have a higher chance of actually surviving.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, because the way luck coins work are you flip it, and if it's tails,
you keep
you succeed and you keep the coin.
So you can spend it for a thing. It's a little bit different. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a hero point in 7C, kind of. You spend it to save yourself, do some various things. But then once you spend it, you flip it to see if you keep it
if you keep it or not. Yeah.
So there's a
possibility. But you have to spend it for a thing. So you can either spend it to like remove a bad thing, or you can spend it to try and succeed a thing, or you can spend it to like not die. And if you're spending it for yourself, you have a chance to flip it. If you want to like jump in front of that bullet for a friend, you can spend your luck coin for somebody else, but there is no chance to flip it then.
True.
Which is
That's fair.
Kind of rough.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. But I like the idea that these luck coins are in this forever rotating pool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know, whenever you don't keep one as a player, you know, whenever you lose it, it goes to the GM, and then the GM, they don't have anything to do with it, but to give it to one of the players whenever they see fit. So.
It's just interesting
kind of
to me too, like
to spend and distribute luck coins.
Yeah, keep moving, moving. Always keep moving. Mm-hmm. Now it's kind of interesting if you look at like basically what is health points in this is luck, and when your luck runs out, that's when you have to worry about the luck coin. And everybody has a set amount of luck, and so when you fail something, you lose luck. But if you fail something bad enough, you can also get conditions. So as you get conditions, you have disadvantages on things, which means it's more likely for you to fail things, which means you lose more luck. Which means there's a very quick spiral where if you start failing, you just keep failing and you die. And that's kind of rough. Like,
yes.
Right, exactly. Mm,
not great.
True.
It's very interesting how that goes.
It seems like it could be, like, not playing it yet.
Yeah, not playing it.
It seems like it could be somewhat unforgiving in areas, but that's completely, from an outside perspective.
Yeah.
But anyways, back to some character creation. I guess we're gonna, build some tester characters here.
Yeah,
sure. So, pick two tags.
I'm trying to find all the tags in all the books.
Fair.
I found them all. So, in the core book, it is page 39.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Golden Age book, it is on page 32. And I'm assuming we can go... Can we mix match?
Yes. The core tags are core. They can kind of...
Yeah. Because it seems like even though the core is set modern, all of these tags are pretty generic.
There is some little bit of tweaking that might have to happen. For example, a techie, you might not be an electronics, or you might not be into electronics or IT as much in the 30s.
But right. If there is some weird Nazi contraption to try and harvest the energies from, you know, the Ark of the Covenant, then you'd probably be the one to, you know, figure out that weird technology.
Well, that might be a little bit more arcanist.
If you're trying to figure out the Ark itself, yeah. But if you're trying to figure out the Nazis technology, that might be tech, because that's what Nazis made.
Mechanics.
Yeah, that's mechanics. Yeah, it would be more of, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So... that's very true. Any thoughts or first impressions here?
I'm scrolling through.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking through a bunch of these.
Of course, Smuggler is a good one that I kind of said first off.
Wait, what's the difference between Playboy and Hunk? That's like kind of the same thing. No, I guess it's a little bit different. Hunk is like all about that swollen body, as opposed to Playboy is all about the seduction.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Playboy slash femme fatale is much more social.
Yep.
Whereas the hunk
is just plain so physical. Playboy's expertise is seduction and Hunk's expertise is strength. So yeah, it's more a physical versus
beefcake
charisma kind of situation. Yeah.
He's cracked me up.
Logan, what's sticking out to you?
Probably something Daredevil, just because that sounds fun.
Mm.
You know,
nice.
Get that stunt and that action movement, and you know, Daredevil has that playing around with heights, so you get to play with that.
That's true.
That parkour side of things.
That's true.
I like that.
I'm kind of thinking maybe a gunslinger smuggler.
Perfect.
Interesting.
Yeah, perfect. Might be a smuggler gunslinger. Something like
go
that.
Go for it.
I think I might go Daredevil Soldier. Ooh. Actually.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah, because the combination seemed kind of weird, and it might be one of those like, yeah, you're a little too wild, kid, to be on the line, so we're gonna, you know, throw you off in the special assignment, and then I have to, like, I don't know, somehow connect to your character, because you know how to, like, get me into places that I shouldn't be.
Right, exactly.
You can smuggle things
in
and
out.
We've
been put on assignment together, and...
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Right.
Okay, we'll do
let
me start putting stuff down. Oh, wait, no, it's a sheet.
So, just put that into your, call me if you wanna.
Call me if you need a blank.
Yeah.
Daredevil.
Gunslinger. Daredevil soldier. Then, we get to go filling in diamonds.
Fill in some diamonds.
Yes, and the way this works is, there are, basically, fields, which are action, guts, knowledge, society, wild, and crime.
Okay.
And
your kind of main attributes.
Okay. Yeah, those are basically attributes. And they start with two diamonds already in them.
Yep.
Okay.
So each of your tags should give you a field to into.
Yeah, so now, it gives field expertise and then skills. So under field, you get that.
Now, Logan.
Yeah, it doubles up. So I think I'm going to go guts on the Daredevil as opposed to action on both.
What it does, in that case, both tags have the same field. They both have action.
Both have action.
But then they both have a secondary for exactly this kind of situation. If they're both the same, you could pick... Daredevil has guts, or Soldier has wild.
Right.
So you could choose either of those as your second.
That's cool.
And then if you have doubled up skills between them, that's not a problem. You just take to the third point?
No.
Okay.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. Skills have one diamond already in each of them, but there's room for two more.
Sure.
So in that case, if the tag doubles up, you just end up with, you have three in that.
So here in the next couple minutes here, Logan and I are frantically filling in different diamonds on our character sheets. So this will probably jump cut, and then we will not be filling in diamonds anymore.
That's fair,
right? Like a diamond.
So So give us just a few moments here, and we'll get going.
Actually, what's interesting is, according to the pilot, as you guys are creating your characters, the game master, it's suggested, is kind of frantically Googling information on Egypt to be able to put together what your guys are going to be experiencing.
Nice.
Pilot episode.
Right, exactly. A little bit of, are you skimming Wikipedia?
No.
So I got all my skills and field and expertises in.
Okay.
And then we
now
need to put a thing.
You get two more diamonds to fill in on those skills.
On the skills, okay.
Yes, your choice.
I like.
And this is freeform.
Being alert.
Two of say that one more time. Just you get two bonus points for your skills.
Yeah, just skills. Correct. Yeah, it's not in the fields.
Not in the mains, but in the subs.
Yeah, the subs.
Well, it's free. This is free reign. This can go anywhere on any of the skills.
Right, but I couldn't increase my society to 3. Because society is a field,
Is a, yeah, that's a field, not a skill. Correct.
Got it.
Yeah,
correct. Perfect, yeah.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Okay. I think I've got a decent spread.
Okay.
Not bad.
Once you have that, now we need to go into expertises.
Each
of your tags gives you an expertise, which you can list over on the far right side.
I have.
Perfect. I believe we both have done that already.
Oh, you're jumping ahead. Okay.
Yep, we have.
I think, we just kind of saw that to the side and we just popped them in there.
Okay.
Typey-type.
So, after you've noted your two expertises, you can add a third one.
A third
there
expertise.
Is a list. There is a list of tags, expertises, on page 40.
Just below, on the next page, after your types.
There's also, in the Golden Age book, there are some there.
There are a couple, yeah.
And those are just suggestions. If you have something else that you can think of, you can take that and follow.
Oh, it's open. It's open to interpreton.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Perfect.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I think I have to go with espionage because that sounds like so much fun because I like to get into places. Mm-hmm. I know military structures and, you know, if I learn things, that's useful.
Exactly. Right? And, you know, just because it's me, I'm going to grab a Colt.
Yes. I was so tempted by that. I'm glad you took it. That's awesome. Yes.
I thought you were taking it, to be honest.
I was totally thinking about it. It was a real hard tug. And I just thought it fit espionage better for the whole military background. But yep, I dig the occult side.
Yeah, military with espionage. Yeah,
that's awesome.
And since I'm like a gunslinger and a smuggler, I'm like, maybe I've found some weird things in the past. And it's like, oh, I've gotten into the occult things.
Right. Yeah, not only can you get me into places, you also can help like be a bit of a expert on things.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's awesome.
Nice.
I dig.
And because of the points that I spend, I'm a crackpot shot.
There you go.
Very cool.
I'm a decent shot, too.
Okay, so you got that. Next thing you do, each of you mark one luck coin. So on your
one
luck coin there,
got
you
it.
Just put the number one.
Uno.
And we have
start
10,
with.
Looks like, luck points. Yeah. Cool.
Yes, I think that's right.
Yep, 10.
And now we're getting to the personal... Yeah, now we're getting to the personal data. And this is, I think one of the things that's really interesting about this game is where you're from.
Mm-hmm.
It actually kind of breaks it down into three parts.
Yeah.
There's your heritage, your homeland, and your workplace. So your heritage is kind of where your family is from. Your homeland is where you are from.
Where you grew up, yeah.
And workplace is more where you operate out of
your home base for work.
Sure.
Yes.
The mothership. The
now,
you know, whatever.
Yeah. Now we have established we're going to be starting in Egypt.
Yes.
Is this where you normally work? Is this where your is this your workplace? maybe this is your homeland, you've come back here, or maybe this is just something that you've gotten called into that...
Yeah, maybe this is just another job.
Yeah, that you have nothing... So those are three choices that you get to make.
Okay.
I like there's also a randomizer for places to call home. Page 56.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to completely go random with this, or 55, somewhere thereabouts, you totally could.
Yes.
Yeah, that's something I've noticed kind of reading through different parts of this. They kind of recycle a lot of their stuff, you know, for different things. So,
sure.
You know, combat versus danger versus trouble is the other one. I don't remember. But they kind of use the same mechanic for those, and then you know you can basically randomize anything.
You can, yeah.
In this game, which
you don't have
wonderful.
To, but you can.
Don't just have nice. To, but like it also gives you a chart for if you're a person like me that just like picks a couple things that they like.
It's fun. It's fun to just have an option to not have to think about it, because then it's not the not thinking about it. It's like I have so many options available to me. I needed to focus down. I roll something random.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's a cool idea. That inspires me for this, and then it starts to get the wheels going. Like that's I always like that in every system.
Exactly.
And especially because this is a pilot, there's no stress.
Yep.
Roll it. Try it. If you don't like it,
yeah,
if it
exactly.
sucks, you can change it.
Do something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know workplace because I feel like that's kind of weird. It's like wherever I would get sent. And since I'm military background, I'm actually going to go with like British military because they were in World War II sooner.
Mm. That makes sense.
And so wherever the crown sends me is where I go. So he's going to go with Scottish background for his heritage and homeland.
Okay. Where is he based out of, though?
Well, I feel like
probably
wherever we're needing to be, and since maybe like the war hasn't started yet or it's just starting to get going or whatever else not, it's probably moving a lot. I don't what is the point of the workplace when we might be moving around everywhere? Like what is the reason to put that? Is it like
it's your home base?
Oh, okay.
It's your home base where you report to your commander, you know, where is your barracks?
You know, looking through here, there's a lot more that we could get into, but I think we just be getting into full-fledged character creation at this point.
Normally, this is where we would then play out a session based on that search for the Spear of Destiny against the Nazis, have some run-ins, have some adventures. And then at the end of that, we would step back and say, okay, what worked, what didn't work, what do we want to change? And then we could start, and then we would be going into a campaign.
Right.
Naturally,
sense.
Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I'm excited now. Going through character creation, I'm excited to do this, but it's for another day, unfortunately.
Yes, it is. Well, good.
Oh, perfect. But I think without further ado, I think we might end this segment of Session Zero. All right, I think with that being said, we talked a lot about this, but I think a lot of that was because we were pretty excited to get into this. We've kind of had this game in our view for a little bit here, and it's kind of been, you know, it's like wearing a hole in our pants. We're wanting to play it.
There you go.
But yeah, I'm excited to play that. But without further ado, I think we're going to get into the main topics portion of our episode today. And today is all about metagaming. Now, this is kind of something that goes back and forth throughout time in the tabletop game world. I kind of sent a question out on Reddit here. Just kind of trying to see what other people thought about it, and we got a lot of mixed reviews.
Yeah.
But you know, I guess what do you guys think? We'll open it up.
Well, I think
to,
before we
to
start talking about
here.
That, let's make sure we define what we're talking about, because I have noticed people use metagaming for a lot of things that isn't that. You know.
I think that might be part of the conversation. Is you know, are there different things than metagaming that are falling under
that people are calling metagaming
umbrella?
Yeah.
And I think the overall answer is yes, and we'll definitely get into that.
Yeah.
So kind of just defining metagaming for, you know, what this table thinks of metagaming. What do you guys think is your definition of metagaming?
Well, I mean, the easy short answer is using player knowledge that your character wouldn't have to try and, quote, win the game or change the situation in a way that doesn't make sense for your character. But that's very vague. I like Wikipedia's got a pretty good definition. Metagaming used by role players describes a player's use of real-life knowledge concerning the state of the game to determine their character's actions and when said character has no relevant knowledge or awareness under the circumstances. This can refer to plot information in the game, such as secrets or events occurring away from the character, as well as facets of the game's mechanics, such as abstract statistics and precise limits of abilities. Metagaming is an example of breaking character as a character is making decisions based on information they could not know and thus would not make in reality. I felt like that was really succinct.
Man, like Logan, you're doing something that is blowing my mind, and that's something that we have very rarely done, and that has brought actual facts
into our arguments. I like facts. People make up all kinds of random stuff nowadays, and it's nice to just be able to be like, no, this is what it is, yo.
Absolutely, and thank you for supplying us with that definition of metagaming. Sure. No, I think I'm on the same page as that definition there.
Yeah,
it's basically using what you know, being a gamer or whatever, specific things that your character doesn't, and you use that knowledge in order to benefit as a character in this made-up game world that is having fun.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that we want to look at is the kind of historical knee-jerk reaction is that metagaming is bad. Metagaming, you know, in your Reddit, the term cheating came up a lot.
A lot.
You know, and that is definitely part of it. But, you know, are there more ways of looking at it than, are there advantages? Are there pros to metagaming as opposed to just the cons?
Right, right.
And, you know, is something that several people have kind of said in the responses to this is the fact that metagaming is kind of baked in to most games. So, you know, you kind of have to have a little bit of knowledge in order to play the game. You know, some people even argued that, you know, knowing the rules is metagaming.
Right.
I was going to say I think it's a make into every system. If I'm jumping over a crevice, I might have a general idea of I can make that or I might not. But if you're playing a game, you have statistics to say I have a 60% chance of jumping over.
Or I know my strength is a 12, and therefore with a running jump I can do 12 feet of jumping, and I can see there are two squares on the map, so therefore I know it's 5 foot for each square, so it should be about 10 feet. So as long as I don't slip, I should be able to make this jump. That is kind of some outside knowledge that we're not going to be able to bust out a ruler while the monster's chasing us in real life.
Right.
Exactly right. Yeah. Is that metagaming? Is there a different word for that?
Right.
Well, that kind of sounds like strategy and processing to me. Mm-hmm. You know, if a normal person were in a danger scenario, you know, in that specific danger scenario, this individual would, you know, likely go through odds of things in their head before doing things. It's like, hesitating. People hesitate,
but there's not a statistical sheet in front of them for their for them to do their calculations on.
Right. But I think a lot of people know their physical limits, so you can at least say, I probably can't make that.
Well, and specifically to the jump idea, as you become someone who is training in that, and I have been training for a long time and have been a coach for many years in parkour. Parkour is about jumping between things and jumping on things and balancing on stuff. And you kind of almost get like a visual ruler based on the environment and what you're looking at. You can kind of just gauge what a distance would be within a pretty good mark. So Mm-hmm. You know, even if you don't have those stats there, if you're experienced with a thing, you know the thing.
Yeah, and I can say something similar with rock climbing.
Oh, right.
Totally. I've been rock climbing for years.
Yeah, you probably know exactly how far you can dyno up a wall.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Or, you know how far you can reach.
Yep.
If you extend all the way, you know how long your arm is after rock climbing for 6-7 years.
Oh, for sure. You don't have to look.
So,
you feel it.
Yeah, you don't even have to look. You know at that point. So, a lot of things become second nature if you do them regularly. So that, that could kind of be argued for that strategic side of things. We got off topic so hard.
but that's a good point, though, because like if you have a game that has an abstraction, you're going to be required to, quote, metagame, break out of character to discuss or to do that properly. And I'm going to go more specific with this and be like, if you have a game that has hit points and you're also playing a fantasy setting where you have people who are also going to heal each other, if you're the healer, you only have a certain number of heals you can do, period, let alone in a turn. You're not just going to randomly start throwing spells at your friends because, I don't know, they look like they could need help. I like that person better. No, you have people going, what's your hit points? Or trying to not metagame. They're like, on a scale of 1 to 56, how do you feel? Well, I'm about a 32. Yeah. Okay, you can wait. How about you? I'm a 17. Okay, you need my healing this round.
Yeah.
That's an abstraction, but it is an abstract concept because hit points don't really work in real world, but it is how that system works to give you, like, a breakdown of basically hits against you, and so you have to kind of be abstract to deal with that abstraction.
That's kind of a thing that we have to think about too is the fact that we're dealing with a lot of things in role playing games that we have never had real life experience with.
Oh, I've totally fought a beholder before. What are you talking about? Totally kidding. Or am I?
Oh, with your hair, you look like you fought a beholder.
Right. Oh, man.
I'm sorry. I had to.
Yeah.
No, your hair looks wonderful, though.
Thank you.
It's hard to place that whole metagaming thing on these situations that you haven't done before ever. Yep. So how can you say, are you metagaming in certain scenarios?
So let's get some obvious ones out of the way. Let's address the elephant in the room. Bad metagaming. Let's give some examples, some ideas where that is bad. And I think we're going to kind of lean towards good, because a lot of people say, you did a thing, that's metagaming, and freak out in a knee-jerk reaction. I think we're trying to maybe talk against that and give some options for where this could be useful. So let's get some ones out of the way, some silly situations. Sure. Let's say we've got a pre-written module for a game, and you've already played that before, and you know where this is going to go. And so you start playing towards where it's going to go and trying to beat that module, even though that's not really helpful.
Yeah.
That's not what your character would do. There's no way for that person to know
it.
That would be bad.
I think
that's not that takes away from a role playing.
That takes away from the whole table because you might be the only one who knows how that goes. That's kind of crappy.
Yeah, I think a kind of a core theme to a lot of these might be the concept of winning or losing.
Yes,
that mentality.
Yeah.
I'm doing this in order to succeed.
Yep.
Or to win.
That's the key difference. Succeed versus win.
Yes. True.
Because succeeding is, indicates progression. Winning just indicates, we're done. I have won.
Oh, yeah. That's a really good way to think about that. I have won. I've finished this, and there's no continuing of the story. That's really, I like that.
That is good. I like that.
I do it sometimes, guys.
Well, depending on the game you're playing, winning is part of it. Like, you want to do that. If you're playing, a strategy game, you want to beat the person. But if you're playing a role-play game, you want to continue the story. Don't blur those two.
It's a tabletop game. It's not a...
But it's not a
board game.
Yep.
It's a role-playing game. So you're role-playing, and it's all about the story. It's not about winning or losing.
Sure.
And that, that's kind of the thing that people need to... You competitive people out there need to understand.
But I think that's, and for metagaming, that's kind of the core of it. If you're doing this in order to just win for the sake of winning, that's a bad thing. If Dorothy knew that the Wicked Witch melted with water, she'd hop out of her house and throw a bucket of water on the witch, and the whole Wizard of Oz would be over.
Dorothy Fire Brigade.
So, right.
And, she could just say, yeah, I already saw the movie, so...
Right.
Yep.
That would be an example of metagaming, obviously, that would kind of spoil the rest of the situation.
Yeah, Think of metagaming as if you traveled back in time and did things over again. Mm-hmm. Don't do things to change the future.
Interesting.
Yeah. Or no, don't do things to alter things in a specific way, So, yeah. Yeah. Interesting concept to think about. Like we said earlier, there were a few people that kind of brought up the comparison of metagaming versus cheating, which I found was really interesting because I don't think of it as cheating because, again, that's the whole difference between succeeding and winning.
Yep.
I think you cheat in order to win.
Yeah.
And, I really don't think of cheating when it comes to role-playing games.
Well, you shouldn't, but if you're playing, for example, if you're playing a mystery game where the point is to find out who the murderer is.
Who done it.
And you've picked up the module and you've read to the end and say, aha, the butler, and you walk right in and you start giving the butler more attention than you probably should, and really kind of putting the pressure in that one area rather than interviewing all of the suspects.
All of the suspects. You're hyper-focused on on the specific thing because you know it already.
Right. That's, that's cutting out a lot of the story. That's a lot of, that's a way of spoiling it.
Yeah, and fun is kind of the surrounding term around metagaming as well, I think.
True.
In a lot of perspectives, I think.
I think part of that cheating is going into a situation knowing how you're going to beat it beforehand, too. Some of that can be hard in a game where you have, like, D&D. I'm going to bring that up for an example, where you have monsters which have different resistances or, strengths or weaknesses or whatever else not. And if you go into a fight and you go up against a blue dragon and your character's never experienced a dragon, you're very low level, you're trying to figure this sort of stuff out, and you go, well, I'm not going to throw any lightning bolts at him, even though my character has been a lightning sorcerer this entire time, a storm sorcerer, because I know that they're resistant to lightning damage. That's a little bit out of the norm because, you're knowing something that you shouldn't.
So here's the thing, in that sense, you could you argue that, if your character is a bookworm also, let's say that is...
Yes, thank you. This is where I was going to go next.
Yeah, no, that is a way that is built in that your character would naturally know things because maybe they've read about dragons before.
Right. Yeah, and so if you are an experienced character and it's hard for you to not operate in an efficient manner, maybe you make sure that you have a character that has some sort of knowledge outside of that, that it's not just, hey, I'm a new, 14-year-old kid running out there trying to slay dragons. I have some experience under my belt. I have done some studying for years. That's why I am, this old, fuddy-duddy who knows all these random things. Maybe that's an important thing for you to do. Yeah.
If Frodo only would have known just not to put on the ring ever.
Yeah, that wouldn't happen.
But yeah, anything else about metagaming? I'm sure we can talk about it for a long time. Yeah. But yeah, there are some specifics we wanted to talk about here, I know.
Let me ask you this. We talk a lot about narrative gaming. And, Zach, you do this a lot. You walk into a room and have the player describe the room.
Mm.
Is that metagaming? Because
no.
The character doesn't get to choose how that room looks, but it's not really pre-planned. And it is a possibility that the player might be doing that to his advantage, saying, yeah, there's a rug here that I might be able to pull out from under the bad guys.
In the sense of something like, let's argue 7th Sea.
Mm-hmm.
That's something where basically if you want it to be there and you have a raise to spend on it, it can be there basically. Mm-hmm. And so, my mind is like, why can't you do that in other games? Why can't you allow people to maybe set up, hey, there's a back exit. I see there's a back door that maybe, if stuff goes south, we can get out of here.
But going back to the whole, like, cheating is metagaming sort of thing, there's no cheating in that. You're being invited to add to the narrative for everyone's enjoyment, not for your own personal winning.
That's true.
And so,
good point.
That isn't metagaming in the sense that you're being invited into that GM's seat to take on that position and say, hey, what does this look like?
So is that an example then of positive metagaming, or is there a different term for that?
I don't think that's metagaming at all. I don't think it's connected to it.
I don't think it's considered metagaming because most of the things that a person would naturally describe are purely visual aspects. I don't often give up the opportunity to narrate something if I know that they can use it to their advantage.
And narrators always have the opportunity to veto in a situation like
that.
GMs can always say, that can't happen.
That's reasonable.
Right, and in describing a room, you're not also saying, and there's no monsters in here, and, you know, there's also, like, a golden statue that I exactly needed. That's the whole mission. Like, you're not doing that. You're literally describing, like, what are the tapestries look like?
Yeah, what's the physical room look like? Like, are there large, ornate stained glass windows along the walls and 13-foot vaulted ceilings and, you know, whatever? Like, that stuff doesn't usually matter in order to bend the parts of the game in a player's favor.
Right.
They may in subtle ways, but, you know, And I think that's kind of where I'm trying to steer this, is metagaming. Are there positive uses of metagaming?
So I think we're done with the negative side. We should probably then shift to the good uses of metagaming. For sure.
Yeah,
I think so, definitely. Because I think it's pretty agreed upon that metagaming often ruins fun for others.
Right.
And I think the negatives are kind of obvious.
Yeah, and I think we can talk about negatives all day and forever. Yep. But yeah, the positives are real interesting to think about, just because you often don't. You know, like a lot of people said here, they compared metagaming with cheating, and I don't think that's the only thing out there.
Well, I think some good ways to think about metagaming is knowing what we're all trying to do. It could be considered metagaming. Mm. So my character is a bit of a wild card. He's always trying to go out and do his own thing. He's kind of that lone wolf sort of attitude. But I know as a player that we are trying to get this group together, and we are trying to end up as a group that is going to be adventuring together for the next campaign. So this first adventure is us first meeting and coming together. Should I only play my character and just be the lone wolf and pull away from everybody and make them have to follow me? That kind of pulls away from everybody else's fun. So I'm kind of metagaming, knowing that I'm going to try and make us all be together at the end of this. I'm going to try and work with this group. But that's useful because we're trying to go towards something together.
Right.
Yeah, and honestly, we can take a look at a real-life experience here. Mm-hmm. Here recently, we had our first few episodes of our new 7th Sea campaign.
Woot woot.
And mm-hmm. Logan, that's kind of exactly the situation you described there.
Yep.
And in this situation, we were separate, and Logan and Mark and I, we all know that all these characters at the end theoretically need to come together.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Is that metagaming? Is that an example of metagaming? And I think that's a tough question to answer.
Well, I think it is. We had outside knowledge that changed that may have affected at least our character's decision-making process.
Outside influence.
But is that just playing the game? Is that just part of playing the game? I guess you don't have to. Here's the thing. You don't have to have a campaign of people all together.
You don't.
But I don't know why you would.
That's a common statement for a-hole characters, or a-hole players. It's like, well, that's what my character would do. That's not helpful because you're playing a game with people. Mm-hmm. Go home and play a video game if you don't want to play with people.
That's fair. This
is a game where we're together. So yes, it is some meta knowledge, but that's not a bad thing. And if you're going to be like, well, that's what my character would do, that's not helpful for anybody. Nobody likes that attitude. you're not bringing a game together with others. So, yeah, I think it's an important thing to do to combat that sort of attitude or combat that mindset.
And there might, that might be an even, you know, expansion on that is if you've had a good session zero and you've talked about where what you want to do, maybe some players have expressed something that they want to avoid.
Right.
If you're playing and you avoid and you do exactly what that other player has requested and avoid something that maybe your character would have normally done, that is using an outside influence to change your character's actions.
Yeah.
But it's doing it in a way that is actually helping the table as a whole come to a better place.
Yeah, because we're making it a safe game. Yeah. We're all enjoying
respecting
this thing
boundaries.
Together. Respecting boundaries.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, being collective in this tabletop experience.
Right.
Yeah, so everybody at the table can have as fun of an experience as the person sitting next to them.
And back to that session zero situation, you know, if you are saying, hey, we're going to play an espionage game, and we're going to try and sneak in and do spy stuff and be subtle and try and have these, like, heist sort of plans. And then on the first episode, you've got somebody who's running in there literally screaming, come at me, shooting a big machine gun. That's not a spy game. That is now a war or
an action
hero or something else like that sort of game. And that is breaking for what we all agreed on. And
right,
we're now
exactly.
pulling away from what we decided to play. Now we're changing in a bad way.
That's a great example.
Right.
But let me ask this. Is that avoiding metagaming, or is that choosing a character that doesn't fit what was agreed on?
A little bit of both.
Is there?
I mean, there's some of the a-hole player mindset in that. There's also some of, you know, if we've all agreed upon this and that's a problem for you and you didn't speak up, that's kind of weird. You should have.
True.
And you are agreeing to play this game, and this game is about X. If you're not okay with X, then you need to say something, or you need to express that, or you need to find a different table.
I mean, Mark, I won't get into any specifics, but what did you think about that specific situation? Because I know
I wasn't gonna bring up that.
I know you had a specific situation where. Something very similar to that happened.
I did, and full disclosure here, it's one of the things that kind of inspired this topic was I had a player kind of rebel against the theming that we all went against, or that we all agreed to. And his response to why did you do that was, I didn't want a metagame. I didn't want meta-knowledge to interfere with my character's natural decision-making process. And
on all sides, nobody agrees to what this individual said. Like, I still don't understand how that's an argument for the actions that were taken.
Were very much, this is what my character would do, and very much ruined the fun for everybody at the table and totally destroyed what everybody had agreed to be playing.
And
so,
and kind of ruined the campaign at that point in time.
Right. But it's kind of, but it's an example of how, because he threw the word metagame out, he assumed everyone would agree. Metagame's
bad.
Therefore, you know, my argument
this
is
good. Yeah. What I did is fine. Right.
So, you know, which is why we kind of want to step back and say, look, metagaming is not automatically bad.
The way
there are some good uses for it. You know, another example I kind of wanted to go to, going a little further back in our 7C history.
Yeah.
We did our finale of Flash Bash and Panache, and
the wonderful Logan.
Played by the wonderful cast and also previous cast with Steve, and you know,
yes,
it was a good game.
But there was a situation there at the end. Steve was facing off against Santiago, and they had their, you know, this was their
moment.
And I had kind of beat my guys, I could have jumped in and joined the fight and taken over. But that was Steve's moment.
Yeah.
And I still supported him. I made moves that supported him.
And changed the map constantly. Like
Exactly. But yeah. And that was kind of meta knowledge is this is Steve's scene. I'm not gonna steal the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
but I think it added to that finale.
Yep.
Is that meta knowledge or is that a character moment?
Or is that just not being a dick because you know this person's right. Really had a cool moment and they need to have a spotlight too, you know?
Partly true.
Because you think about it. If you think of any situation that involves camaraderie, often sports teams, your team kind of supports you, whoever that be, you know, the quarterback, the pitcher, whatever, your pinch hitter, whoever's going
to knock how to get the ball to the person who's going to make the goal. You know how to help and support.
But there was also some story structure knowledge. I knew we're in the finale. I knew this is, this is coming down to the wire. And, story but structure wise, I knew that was the finale.
Regardless, your character, Nathaniel, knew that this was a big moment for Mateo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think normally that could be argued as
character knowledge.
Non-meta knowledge. Like, that's still a person-to-person interaction. And I think those moments that build character because you maybe decided to stay out of the spotlight
it could be argued, but I'm telling you, I honestly thought this is the finale, and I knew
that's fair.
I was doing it.
I mean, that's a fair thing to say, though. Like, as I'm writing it, I know I wanted to make sure that we had an Inquisitor for the bad guy, because that was not just a problem for all of you, but also specifically for Mateo. And this would be like a last chance for Steve to play with us. So I wanted to also kind of highlight on him a little bit as well.
Yeah.
So,
and that my friends is none other than theatrics.
Yeah.
I think
it's
writing.
Right.
That it's the kind of the core of what all of this is.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that,
and we all agreed to it.
Whether that be this game or, whatever. Yeah, it's all about the story and I think the experience while we're at the table doing the same thing.
I think too also the metagame that really derails the game would be outside of what we agreed to as a group. If we go into a game and we know that we're all experienced in this one game and we know how these monsters work, then we're going in and we all agree that, yes, we need to go into it with that knowledge because we're trying to play like a hard mode of whatever that is, then we're choosing on that point to actually metagame on purpose because we're knowing outside knowledge, but we want to have that game experience. That would be another good use of metagaming.
Interesting.
If it's what we've agreed to here. If we've agreed to that we're all new, fresh adventurers in this world and we're not supposed to bring in old knowledge from previous campaigns or previous games we've played, then that would be bad to bring in knowledge about a monster or whatever that wouldn't apply.
Right.
Because we would not agree to that.
The collective.
Yep.
Yeah.
We need to do a session zero, and in that session zero we talk about what things are good and not good, what things are okay and not okay. That's part of it, I think.
Right.
Interesting. Yeah.
Somebody described D&D as being both as two games in one. So you're playing Dungeons & Dragons, you've got the roleplay side, and you've got the tabletop strategy game side of things. And for those who like that mindset of breaking those two things up, if you're playing a strategy tabletop game, I need to know when your character is going to act with his ability so I can couple my ability with that so we can be the most effective. But if you're going to try to do more like a critical role sort of focus, and the battle is partially tactical, but it's almost more of a focus on like our character's abilities and the development of the character in that fight, then having too much of a focus on the tactical would distract from that role-playing moment.
Mm-hmm.
Different focus.
And in those more narrative moments, it almost seems like combat is reaction-based.
Mm-hmm.
Like they saw what the last person did and they react to what this new situation is at the top of their round.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned that because in theater and acting, there's a term that's acting is reacting. And I think
Absolutely.
For role-playing, that's a lot of the, are you reacting to the immediate stimulus Or are you reacting to
yeah.
what you know is going to happen because you've read the script?
Right.
And I think that's also a great thing to bring up with acting. One of the things I got told a lot, because I like to think ahead too much, is be in the moment. Be in the moment, be in the moment, be in the moment.
Yes.
If you're trying to anticipate what your fellow actors are doing, your reactions look fake. They look lame.
Yep.
They aren't there. Because you aren't in that moment.
Exactly.
And to be honest, while the person before you was going, you were probably looking at your character sheet, planning on what spell to cast.
Yep.
And how many spell slots you're going to have after this.
Which can be good if that's the type of game you're playing, but if you are trying to use the combat for something else, then that's bad.
Yeah.
Right, and then at that point you're not reacting because you have no idea what the last person before you just did.
Yeah.
You're only focused on what you can do and stuff like that. So you're not, again, you're not in the moment.
Now, worse than metagaming and not being in the moment there is when it comes to your turn and you don't know what just happened because you've been looking on your phone. That means you're not gaming as opposed to metagaming.
No phones.
And that's really bad.
No phones at the table.
That's not a gaming? Is that a
not a gaming.
Not a gaming.
What is the complete opposite of metagaming?
I'm so not even here, guys.
what
I don't even have
what?
I don't even have
I guess fireball
pad,
dude we're
podcast,
playing 7C
guys.
There are no fireballs. Shush.
oh man so I think moral of the story is metagaming isn't always the end of the world. often I think it's kind of part of gaming in a way.
Communicate,
it allows you
people.
To you know, to keep the scenario or the scene, the session, the campaign, whatever the situation is, you know, keep it fun for everybody and, you know, and don't ruin anybody's fun.
Yeah.
With your metagaming. Because,
yes.
Because that's the worst.
It really is. It really is crap. You know, you gotta work with your people. It's a game of communication. Talk with the group. Communicate with the group. Play. Together.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And metagaming can be fun sometimes.
Totally.
True. Very true.
All right, gentlemen. Well, I think with that being said, we might wrap up this episode here. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me today. I have had a blast, like always.
Good at you.
And don't metagame.
Unless it's good.
Don't be a punk, okay?
Yeah, there you go.
Right, absolutely. All right, ta-ta for now.
And that's it for this episode of Tabletop Radio Hour. Like always, you can find this episode on soundcloud.com/tabletopradiohour and on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter @tabletopcast if you have any questions or comments. You can join us over on facebook.com/tabletopradiohour for regular updates. We also have an email address, that is tabletopradiohour@gmail.com. Our website, tabletopradiohour.wordpress.com. You can find information about our Patreon page on our website. I want to thank you all for listening, and keep rolling 20s.